بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستهديه ونستغفره ونؤمن به جل وعلا ولا أكفره وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أرسله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون. Dear brothers and sisters, for shortness of time, I would like to ask your permission to present what I'd like to say more from a personal perspective. Usually we talk about Imam as a ideologue, a distant personality. Is it all right if I talk about Imam today as he personally affected myself and others? Is that all right? Okay, so if we say we or I, it's not from arrogance, it's just saying this has been our experience. What we want to do is try to explain what things were like. We all know what things were like, whether it was in Lebanon or Iran, but very few people, and in Pakistan, but very few people get a full picture of how we here in America, how this whole process evolved with us. So I appreciate your allowing. First of all, by 1979, many of us had been Muslim for quite a while, and we were all readers of the ideologues of the time, the writings of Imam Hassan al-Banna, Sayyid Qutb, Maulana Maududi, all of those writings we are familiar with. And there's a hadith that says at the head of every century, Allah would raise up a mujaddid who would revive, renew, and restore Islam. This great personality would practice tajdid. That means that he would purify Islam. He would bring Islam back to its original focus. He would rid Islam of all of the accumulated baggage of hundreds of years of accumulated stagnation and baggage. So we all looked to Egypt for this comer. We looked in Pakistan. We looked everywhere but Iran. And in a way, this was a blessing, because while everybody was looking in Egypt, while everybody else was looking everywhere else, nobody was looking in Iran. I mean, in the general Muslim world. And who would expect anything to come from Iran? Although we've had the 15th of Qurday, although Imam Khomeini has been in exile now, for 12, 13, 14 years by that time, nobody outside of Qom, outside of Najaf, knew about him. I mean, we didn't have any literature whatsoever to prepare us for what might come. But we all hoped, we all prayed, and we all expected this great personality to come, to unite us, to give us hope, to build our dreams, and this is what happened. In fact, we got more than we dreamed of, right? Because all of our leaders before had went bad on us, right? Coming out of the nationalist days, when they got power, they got corrupt. We were friends before, now we're workers, we're servants for whoever the great leader is. But Imam Khomeini was entirely different. And we didn't learn to love him just by his personality. We watched very close, because we were suspicious of leaders. We had been hurt so many times by great leaders. Every person came along went bad. Abdul Nasser went bad. Anybody you could, Ayub Khan went bad. Everybody went bad, right? Tell the truth. Everybody we had running around went bad on us. So we watched Imam. closely. We watch, you know, in the West they say power corrupts and absolute power absolutely corrupts. Isn't that right? Imam Khomeini had power. He had access to wealth, everything, and it had no effect on him at all. We said, that's the one. Huh? That's the man. That is the one that we need at this time. And then to stand back and watch what is going on. Being a petty student of history, we know that it is very difficult for anybody to have a revolution in the first place. And then to stand up to all the Western powers and the Eastern powers and the Arab powers, all of them united to finish you off. My goodness. And all of this happened. So as we watched and as we studied, we would see a new government form. Then we would see martyr after martyr. Then we would see the 72 martyrs at one time. Never in history had a new government had 72 martyrs assassinated at one time and that government survived. Never has it happened. And on top of that, here comes a war. Saddam over here with everybody to help him. Got American help, satellite vision, right? A Russian tanks, T-72s, T-54s, French Exocet missiles, $50 billion from Saudi Arabia, $33 million from Kuwait, all given to Saddam, and the invasion of Iran was a surprise. And everybody said, they finished, them Iranians finished talking all that marg bog on record. They washed up now. But by then, we had a feel for it. We said, oh no, they ain't washed up. They just getting started. To sit and watch the Islamic Republic survive boycotts, sanctions, isolation, huh? A war, and when they get together, don't have no army hardly, a few Revolutionary Guards, and then unite to drive Saddam out of Iran, and then they get hit with poison gas. With everybody just watching and helping. Brothers and sisters, I don't know if you understand it, this is a modern miracle. This is a miracle the same as Bani Israel with their back against the sea and Musa alayhi salam hit the water and it opened up, right? Now a lot of people, even when Musa did that, they still didn't believe, right? They said, oh man, that ain't nothing. I would say, tell the truth, if water opened up, especially in them days, tell the truth, would you need any more convincing? Absolutely not. This was all convincing, and it gave us a type of confidence and a type of thicker right here in the United States of America that it enabled us. Because whatever happened to Iran on an international basis happened to us right here inside of the United States. All of our friends that studied with us, when the Saudis passed out money, everybody backed up. All of us that had been there together hoping for a great leader, they turned on Imam. I'm talking about, everybody that was with us turned away from Imam. And they turned away from us. They did. They called themselves isolating us and cutting us off from any access to media or the large scale Muslim bodies, isn't that right? You have never seen me speak here on nothing except here. Lovers of Ahlul Bayt, right? But you ain't never seen me speak on no other platform, right? Why, is that an accident? No, it's not an accident. They told me in 81, they say, we love you, I was a main speaker. They said, Imam Musa, we love you. If you just stay away from those Iranians, that was in 81. I said, no, I said, I became a Muslim to serve Allah, not to serve you. They asked me one more time. After that, no more Imam Musa, all finished. Since then, You haven't heard from me on none of their outlets or anything else. But it didn't matter. You know why? Because we had a role model. Now, this is what I want to tell you, because we might run out of time. You know what a role model is? A role model is someone you want to be like. You know what I'm saying? Now, personally, Allah, then out of three more role models, out of three dreams, Allah had already let me live through two of them to the maximum. And I'll show you what I mean. This is a little flyer here. It has a picture of me before as American gangster, as we call it. Then that's, it says right here, Malcolm X. And then the final role model, Imam Khomeini. Now, you wouldn't understand it unless you understood what I did before Islam. Now, I know you can't see from way up here, but this is a picture right here. This is the sharpest, best dressed man in the United States, I'm telling you. This is me. This is everything. This is sharp. Right now, those clothes would cost, then it just cost about $3,000. But now, this kind to dress like this would cost a minimum of $30,000. And you can't see the face, but that's me. That, any of y'all see American Gangster? Okay, if you saw American Gangster, you'll get the idea. The only difference is we never killed nobody and we never worked with the police. Now, you can't see this car, but this car has mink in it. It's just a big car that people like to drive. The first dream I had was to be a gangster. I mean, what do you expect me to want to do? I'm born and raised in America, right? I daydreamed I would like to be not an engineer, no, not an airplane pilot. Why, I would like to be a gangster. And Allah let me do it. But in letting me do it, you learn all the lessons that you need to do to learn in order to survive as a Muslim. Number one, you learn the FBI. Number one, you learn about informers and snitches and people that tell on you and try to harm you all the time, right? If you can survive as a gangster, you can survive as the imam easy, because that's a much more dangerous world. Another thing it teaches you is about money, about wealth. Because the amount of money that you acquire is unbelievable. Of course you would think I was lying. Now everybody in Oakland knows. I used to buy people brand new cars. You want a new Benz? Here, let's go buy you a Benz. Which one you like? Because in those days we drove Cadillacs. You want a new Cadillac? As you see your friends walking down the street, they look a little hungry, a little poor. And a car made us happy. So you want to see everybody happy, so you go buy them a ride. Well, anyway, the long story of it is, after we went through that process, we realized what we was doing. We were actually helping the government break the back of the revolution by selling drugs to the people, right? We had broke the back. We had helped to break the back of the black revolution. Long story short, what we did was, in wrapping that up, we took our money, left the country, and it was a lot of our brothers in Algeria, some are still now in Tanzania, Zambia, and other places, that we began to fund, you know, our brothers who are in exile. Let me explain. In those days, we were fighting against the government here, and just like any revolutionary group. And our brothers didn't have no money. As I'm a stooge for the government, not a paid stooge like with my name on a list, but as I was a gangster, we were selling drugs to our people, and in reality, we were breaking the back of the rebellion. Because you can't use drugs and all of that and fight a revolution. So anyway, we went overseas, and as I went overseas, I realized that all of our brothers need money. So I said, well, I'll go to South America and I'll set up a cocaine operation This is, I'm sorry, this is just the way we was thinking. And we'll smuggle cocaine into America, and we'll take the money and give it to all the brothers around the world that don't have no money. And that's what we did. But right at the top of that, Allah allowed us to quit. Just not at the bottom of the career, but at the top. Just quit. Then, coming to Islam, only a few years later, this is when Imam Khomeini arrived on the scene. By that time, we're studying Al-Hajj Malik Shabazz also. He is a role model by then. Role model is someone that you want to emulate. You want to be like them. So first is wanting to be like a gangster. Allah let you do it. But they have a saying, the best of those in the days of ignorance will be the best in Islam if they know their religion. Those years of Jahiliyyah was preparing for this struggle now. You know why? Think about it. Think back 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, how many African Americans are still active now that supported Imam Khomeini then? Huh? How many masajid are there ran and operated independently by African Americans that love Imam Khomeini and say it publicly? Think about it around the country. Just think real hard. How many? I would say off the top of my head, none. You know why? Because our people were not prepared for the long range struggle, a protracted war over decades. And not a physical war, shooting, but a war of nerves to be able to stand up in the middle of the United States government and any organization you start, 80% of those people will be government agents. And that's just taking it easy. I just say 80% so you won't think I'm paranoid. But if I said what I really felt, I would say 95%. That's just the way it is. But Imam Khomeini, I'm going to say what he said. Give you an idea. What did he say? That to give us a little backbone and a little strength. He said, rid yourself of your depression and apathy. Improve your methods and programs of propagation. Try diligently to present Islam accurately and resolve to establish an Islamic government. Assume the lead and join hands with the militant, freedom-loving people. An Islamic government will be established. Have confidence in yourselves. You have the power, the courage, and the sense of strategy needed to struggle for liberty and independence. You who succeeded in waking the people, inspiring them to struggle, will cause imperialism and tyranny to tremble. Day by day, you are accumulating more experience, and your ability to deal with the affairs of society is increasing. Once you have succeeded in overthrowing tyranny, you will certainly be capable of administering the state and guiding the people. Okay, what does all that mean? To us, that means, number one, this is the 20th anniversary of Imam's passing. This was 1989 when he passed away. Sheikh Berry, before we was there in 1989. I stayed there a little longer than everybody else. Then I went to Pakistan, then I came back to the USA, and in June, 20 years ago, I moved, left our masjid in Oakland, and went to Washington, D.C. Why did I go to Washington, D.C.? I went to Washington, D.C. because Washington, D.C. is the most Islamic, anti-Islamic city in the world. And if you can survive, you know the rules of business, if you can survive 4 or 5 years, you can basically make it. Brothers asked me, why are you going to D.C.? I say, I'm going to D.C. because they'll throw everything they got at us. And when they do that, if we survive, right, we'll learn all the fitna that they got. And that's just what happened. We done learned so much fitna, we go out looking for fitna now. No, we're not afraid of fitna. You know, like, nobody likes fitna. We said, bring it on. Because we know fitna is an obstacle, right? Fitna is a challenge. And Imam Khomeini taught us that any obstacle that's put in front of you, the bigger the obstacle, the bigger you got to be to get over that obstacle. Isn't that right? So fitna is good for you. It's healthy. Right? An obstacle is good. Everything that happened to us that was heartbreaking and bad and sad helped us. Isn't that right? Right? What happened in Lebanon? It was tragic. I'm talking about the first 82. 40,000 dead in little Lebanon. 1 million people homeless. Beirut got pockmarks all over it. Isn't that right? But the Hezbollah rose up out of those ashes, and by 2000, in fact, I was visiting here in 2000 when the Zionists packed up and left. No treaty, no bargain, and they just got up and left. Isn't that right? And the same thing in 2006. Think about it. How tragic was it? On July the 12th, they invaded Lebanon. You could tell it was with jealousy, blowing up gas tanks and fuel tanks. So the water will, so the petrol will run into the sea and spoil all the beautiful beaches. That's because the Zionists were jealous of Lebanon. Lebanon making a comeback, isn't that right? Europeans, everybody coming from all over the world said, my Lebanon is a nice place. Bringing money, bringing everything, right? And the Zionists hated that, isn't that right? On the 14th, which was Friday, 2 days after invasion, I gave a cookbook called Mubashir, Good News. You know, a Mubashir brings good news. They said, how is that good news? They blowing up everything? I said, no, don't you worry about a thing. I said, history is on our side. Huh? Within 2 or 3 weeks, the Zionists was buckling. Isn't that right? You could watch their news. The Zionists was crying on TV. You saw them. They got stuff. We don't know where they got it from. They like ghosts. Remember that? We can't see them. They ghosts. They coming out of the wood. They coming from everywhere. That's the good news. That means that everything, if you trust in Allah, this is what Imam taught us. You trust in Allah, you believe in Allah, you cannot stop the Zionists and the Americans from doing bad to you. Right? But how you respond to that is up to you. That's the good news. You can't stop them. And the way we call it is, you African Americans always got a saying. We said that bad news is nothing but a setback. You know, when you get set back. If you're trying to do something in Pakistan and things are not good, but they're not that bad, and here come the Americans messing up in Afghanistan, then all of that spill over the border, now all kind of fitna in Pakistan, isn't that right? So it looks like it's a setback. You would think, man, this is a setback for us, but it's not a setback. A setback is nothing but a setup for a comeback. Let me explain that to you, because it's, you know, kind of African-Americanized. When you come from a deprived community and an oppressed community, you're always making a comeback. You're always being oppressed. If you're in Palestine, you build a house and they tear it down, right? Just like that. So you got to build another. They tear it down again. So you're always in the process of being set back, but since you're determined to be a success for the cause of Allah, what do? You keep making a comeback. That's what it's taught us here in America. If you wonder why we have programs like How to Punk the FBI, well, we have another program next week no, next month, the reparking of the FBI. That's because Isna and all of them coming to D.C. So we're going to pass the flyer. How to punk the FBI? Why do we go down to the J. Edgar Hoover building and pass it out to them? It is because we are Americans. And as black Americans, they've done everything to us that you can do to a human being already. Right? So there ain't nothing they can do. Plus, we are citizens. So if you are an immigrant, they can threaten you with everything. We're going to send you home. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. They can't tell us that. They don't even talk. They smile when they're talking to us. No, I make them smile. I say, sit up when you talking to me. Who you rolling your eyes at? That's why I talk to the FBI. Everybody in D.C. know it. Ain't nothing they can do about it. I'm not breaking no law. I'm not threatening them. Now, if I said I'm going to do something to you, now I'm off to jail. Why? Because we learned in crime. When you are something before, you come to Islam, it polishes you up. It improves you, and those things that you learned in Jahiliyyah are now transferred to Islam, but they're Islamicized. So your dealings with government, your not being afraid of systems is good. Now, that's our job. We believe, as African Americans, that that's our job right now in America. We tell the brothers all the time, you, the immigrant community, cannot speak like that to the system. They got something over your head, right? But they're taking all of our rights. They're giving people cases all the time. At Angelman's program last year, we had a program at night, and the kids, we was talking about the criminal justice system and raising money for some of our brothers. And I told the kids in L.A., I said, yeah, I'll be out there in no time, and we'll raise some money for you know who's in jail down there. You ain't did nothing. And the brother's daughter was saying, yeah, my dad is having this problem. And nobody will let us speak at the masjid. I said, well, what about this masjid, that masjid, this Ahlul Bayt Center? What about, this is one of our famous brothers, our brothers. Said they won't let us talk. I said, well, we'll get down there. But you know what? Haven't been able to get down there. You know why? It is so many people in the United States that have these problems, and we don't know anybody that is organized to try to help. So as we was going to L.A. to help pass out money, the money we had collected by the time we went south to Atlanta and was going, we was out of money. We was out of money, and we can't go to these big centers. But I'm going to tell you something. This is real beautiful. Islam prepares you to where this is not even hard work. It's not even hard. It's easy. Now, I'll tell you something that's funny, too. Last year, I was 63 years old. That's the same age Imam was when he went in exile, right? You know what I said? I said, now my work is just beginning. All that other 63, that was training. That's what it was. I feel like I just got started 1 year. You know, when you 1 year anything, you full of fire and fired up. Brothers and sisters, if you get hooked up on that Islam, and I say especially you, it is this period, this is an epic period in history. The lovers of Ahlul Bayt was isolated and cut off for centuries, isn't that right? But every victory, in the last decades has come from Ahlul Bayt. Isn't that right? Think about it. They was. They all are. Even you have victories, you don't even be looking for it. Iraq is still a victory. Don't worry, Fitna, but don't worry about Fitna. Don't worry, it's still going to come out all right. Always be optimistic. It's going to come out all right. Whether it was in Lebanon, right? Wherever you look, It has been in Iran, and now all on the news they talking about a Shia belt. You know, they saying, you know, that whole area, because now they're looking at, well, Pakistan got 20% Shias, Afghanistan got about 18%. My goodness. Then you look down here, and there's Iran, 90%, Iraq, 70%, my goodness, Kuwait, everybody, you know, even Bahrain, it might be ruled by Sunnis, but 80% of the people are Shias in Bahrain, right? So look, I'm telling you, this is your time. This is not a time to get nervous and worried. When Allah give you a blessing, you got to find, what is my mission now? Right? If you prayed for something and you got it, you got to use it. I prayed for something, I got it, I'm happy about it. Don't pray for nothing and then say, well, I better be quiet now. I'm 40, 50 years old. Better take it a little easy. My kids is in college. I got to kind of cool it a little bit. All of the brothers, our brothers, that's what they, Imam Musa, you still sound the same like you did 30 years ago. I said, yeah. That's the same way I feel. Good. Hopeful. Optimistic. Well, you know, we got to use a little hikmah. I said, what you mean by hikmah is being afraid. And I'm not afraid, right? If I'm not going to be afraid of a system and crime, how am I going to be afraid in Islam and doing good deeds, right? How you going to be afraid of somebody and you ain't doing nothing but good? I'm going to move toward a close. Brothers and sisters, Allah charges us with, not force, but presents the opportunity. We are now living in an opportunity of the greatest proportions. I don't know what you're going to say, but on the day of judgment, when Allah asks me, look at all of those sin, Musa, what? You, look at all them sins you got on your... What do you have to say for yourself? Head be down, sweating, right? That's all you can do. You know they're right, all the sins. You can't tell a lie, no lie. We'll say, Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, only one thing I can say for myself. Only one thing. That when you raised up a righteous leader amongst us, I followed him. I did what he told me. That's the only thing good I ever did. That's what I'm going to say. I don't know what you're going to say. I never lied. I never stabbed nobody in the back, right? Any of y'all, you've been around 30 years? Have I ever did anything dirty, told on you, called the police on you? I ain't never did nothing, right? That's the only good thing on my record. That's the only thing going to help on the balance. For me, I don't know about you. That's how it's all affected me personally. And brothers and sisters, this Islamic Republic has convinced so many people that never open their mouth. You would never know. Everybody has been watching. And you know what? A lot of our brothers don't like the president of Iran, Ahmadinejad. But you know who likes him? Everybody else. Everybody. They say, you see that little old brother, man? He told them white folks, blah, 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 blah. You know, we like that stuff. That's what he did. In the Egyptian newspapers, it said, he is our president. He's all our presidents. Why? Because our leaders are cowards. Right? And every time you try to have a victory, every time you do something, they try to throw you a curve at you. Isn't that right? What do we need with Salafis in Lebanon? Soon as we have a victory, right? Here they come. Who paid them? The Israelis, the Zionists, and the Americans. Isn't that right? And the Saudis, they're the same thing. Right? Tell the truth. They paid them, to try to give us another setback. Boy, but look at here. We always brag. I think we get Lebanon in trouble. You know, because if you brag on somebody, every cook by you, I say, yeah, they kicked your behind. They did this, that, 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 that. You ought to see the Jews. The Zionists. So that makes them mad. You know, for us to have any victory, it makes the sister mad. I want to say three things and then I'll close. Brothers and sisters, leave your fingerprints on the pages of history. This is our time. Leave your fingerprints on the pages of history. There's a basic rule. Find a need. If you want to be sick, find a need and fill it. Find a pain and heal it. Find a problem and solve it. Right? You don't have to wonder, what should I do? The Muslims are misguided, misdirected, and they need good leadership. Well, that has to come from you. It ain't coming from nowhere else. Right? You have to be broad, loving, and kind. Come to the people now. They need it more than ever. Find a need and fill it. Find a pain. Who's hurting more than the Muslims? Anywhere, everywhere. Sheikh before was talking about all the Zionists and the Indian, the Hindustani fitna. Isn't that right? Fitna, fitna, fitna. Everywhere we are. In America, I'm going to move to a close. We call it shaping and herding. That the Muslims have been harassed so much that they have been shaped and herded. In other words, they tell us who to give zakat to. They tell us who to be friends with. Isn't that right? And we are doing it. The Muslims are apologizing for things that they didn't do. The next thing we're working on is the re-Africanization of the Islamic movement in America. It's not nationalism to explain what I'm talking about. The big trick years ago was to take a black face off of Islam. Think back 20, 30 years ago. When they thought about Islam in America, they thought about a black face, right? Well, guess what? The government cannot oppress us the same way they can oppress you. Because of the people are going to say, we're in the neighborhood, right? So they're going to say, no, the Muslims is all right. You're wrong what you're doing. So here's what they did. The trick was take a black face off of Islam. You notice on the news everywhere, when you look now, they have an immigrant face on it. And they can say, those immigrants are trying to destroy this beautiful America. Although y'all are the best citizens they got. Right? Tell the truth. The wrong we do don't even count in America. Right? If we do drink, we slipping around, take a little sip. You can't go home. Your wife gonna smell your breath. Right? So we don't drink. We're not using drugs. Maybe a little bit every now and then. I see the brothers look a little funny sometimes. But not too much. We're family people. Our wives, children are everywhere in the masjid. We're doing 200% better family-wise than the Americans. So the trick is this. In order to oppress the Muslims, you have to put a foreign face, an immigrant face on the Muslims and not a black face. And it worked. All the experts, they never call us, right? They call somebody with an immigrant face. That way they can say, see those people? Those foreigners, they're trying to destroy our beautiful America. It worked. Over the last 20 years, the little mosques, the masajid, Islamic centers that we had all over the country, they're beginning to crumble. They're closing down. They have money problems. They have leadership problems. Everything you could imagine. But in the immigrant community, what is it? Big cathedral masajid. This used to be a bowling alley, right? Yeah, look. You don't have hardly any African American centers like this. And some of the other ones, they got chandeliers in the masjid. Good God Almighty. They have 200 and 300 people at Maghrib and Isha prayer. In many, if not most of the masjid, the big cathedral, they don't do nothing. They're scared to death. But it sure is a lot of them praying together, isn't that right? They scared, they standing there new. Right? They scared to death. But it's a lot of them there. Re-Africanization of the Islamic movement in North America. What does that mean? We build up the African community again. We can be more effective in challenging the government with oppression than you can. That's our job. How do we say that? We say that because in the early days, it was the Ansar, Muhajirin, isn't that right? Except in those days, the Muhajirin came, and they got help from the Ansar, isn't that right? Monetary help and what have you. But nowadays, we can't help you with money. Y'all got more money than we do. Right? How can we help? We can help by having strong African-American communities that can stand up for your rights. That's our job here. That's our job. That's our responsibility. Yeah, that's what it, when we look at what is our mission? What should we be doing right now? We should be standing up for Islam and the Muslims in America because the government can't do anything about it. They can send you back home. They can send me back to California somewhere. The next thing is the de-Israelization of the Islamic movement in America. Really all over the world. What do we mean by that? Have you ever noticed that the so-called Muslims do the dumbest things in the world just when they want them done to justify doing to us whatever they want to do? Have you ever noticed that? That would mean we would be the dumbest, consistently dumb over decades, or our movement is so infested with Israeli agents that they can do anything under the name of Islam, and the guy got a long beard, and that justifies killing us, whether it's in Afghanistan or anywhere else. So what we say is the de-Israelization. That means to get rid of or neutralize. You ain't going to get rid of no agents in America. There's too many. But you can neutralize them. That's what we're doing right now. We neutralize them. I'm going to move toward a close. This is only the fourth close. We at least six close minimum, brothers and sisters. We have to close at least six times. Then on the seventh, we say that's it. So we only had four. The last thing, what we're doing right now is what we call judicial review. Judicial review is some law students, some of us just have experience in it. We are right now in the process of reviewing all the cases of all the Muslims who are in prison. And whether it's letter writing or whether it's getting signatures or whatever it is to get our brother's case back in court, we believe that's our job. The last thing we'd like to say is this. Although we've been blacklisted, well, we was blacklisted. Like Iran is not in isolation anymore, neither are we. You know why? Because when you hang on to the rope of Allah, Allah gonna take care of you. I'm gonna say that again. Do not ever worry about being alone for some short periods of time. Allah gonna bring it back to everybody, gonna be your friend. You know why? You befriend people when the time is right, and Allah gonna befriend you. Right now, we help as many of the Muslims as we can because the hadith tell us that if you help a brother or you help their family of a mujahid that's struggling in the cause, Allah will help you on the day of judgment. or Allah will help you in the day of need. So we see that we have a duty to help on any way we can to help the Muslims to, number one, have confidence in themselves. Have confidence in your religion. That's what Imam says. Get rid of your apathy. Don't worry about what you don't have. Day by day, week by week, action by action, you will improve and you will get better until any obstacle that they put over you is only a challenge to see how high you can rise. That's what's happening with this Islam. It's necessary. It's necessary for you and I to do it. The other thing is, brothers and sisters, it's possible. Always be what they call a possibility thinker. Never be overcome by depression. Always say, it may look bad, but it is just possible that we can pull through. That's the lesson of Lebanon. Huh? That's the lesson of maximum organized armored Israelis coming up against the people that say that no, it is possible for us to face this challenge and it is possible for us to overcome. Huh? These are role models. They tell us what we can do right here. So we would be sissies if we was afraid here in America with our brothers and sisters struggling like that. Isn't that right? My goodness. Last thing, if it's going to happen, it's you. You. That means ain't nobody else going to do it. It's you. Brothers and sisters, we thank you for the opportunity to speak about our beloved Imam. Imam Khomeini is a role model. And when you have a role model, it's not arrogant choosing Imam as a role model. It's humility. What I'm saying is, what Imam did in Iran, we would like to do the same thing here. Who says we can't do it? It's happening right before our very eyes. It's so many people taking Shahada in D.C., we don't know what to do. Every week, the people come and knocking on the door. I won't take my Shahada. Yesterday, it was some 16, 17-year-old girls in front of the masjid. They didn't have on nothing, but they was arguing. Well, if you wear that, don't wear hijab, will you get in trouble? Because they're getting ready to take this shahada. And so I get out of the car. They said, tell her if she pork, won't she get in trouble? I said, she won't get in trouble, but just wait till you take your shahada. Well, do I have to do this? I said, don't worry about all of what you got to wear. You come in, we're going to teach you to pray, to fast, and as time go on, you will know what to put on. But don't stand there and find out what the do's and don'ts of Islam is, right? Think of a poor American. Think about it. Everything they do is un-Islamic and wrong. The food they eat, the music they listen to, right? The things they drink, everything is haram. Suppose the first day you tell them, okay, now here's what you can do and here's what you can't do. They're going to say, good God Almighty, I can't do that. It's true, right? So don't go through all of that. Just say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We got prayer class. We're going to teach you how to pray. Ramadan's coming up. We're going to teach you about fasting and all of that. Don't worry about all of it. As time go on, as they come around, the sisters and the brothers, they automatically adopt. It ain't even no problem. So ain't nobody going to tell nobody on the first day, here's 10,000 things you used to do. No, the do's and don'ts in Islam, there's 5 things you can do and 10,000 things you can't do. One thing I want to ask before I leave. This line of Imam stuff is true. That's what we're trying to do. We don't have haunts. We don't have nothing. Even our brothers that used to be on the team with us help out every now and then. I guess the feds told them something. I mean, our lovely brothers. Everything we get, we have to hustle for it. We're going to have a little box back there. We ask y'all to help us out. That's the only way we're going to get some of this stuff done. So we ask you to help as much as you can. And we know you're all foreigners and you have oil wells in your backyard. Well, everybody, they don't know the difference between an Arab, Pakistani, Iranian, right? They say, don't you guys have oil? I know y'all got oil wells. I don't know the difference either. So y'all, all them oil wells in your backyard, in Dearborn, in Detroit, in Ypsilanti, just help us out a little bit. But on the real side, that is a reality. Only Allah and yourself. So we ask you, it's a little box on the table. Just fill it up if you like. Alhamdulillah, it'll help us out. It's not for us. It's for all other Muslims in jail. Ask anybody. Ain't nobody helping them. Nobody. None of the big sinners are helping our people in jail. Because the government don't want them to be helped. Not that we know of. That's what the children say. That's what the wives say. That's what the families say. That nobody's helping us. Brothers and sisters, it's an honor and a privilege to be involved in this part of the Islamic struggle for the last 30 years. It's been a big pleasure. Hey, if I had to, I would pay to be a part of this. It ain't hard. This is a pleasure. To be right in the kernel of history, that's where we're living. We're right in the epic part of history. So we thank you for inviting us. Stay strong and don't let nobody cause you any fear or apprehension. They on the way out, not us, isn't that right? Hey, old Sam is all finished. Obama, Osama, Chelsea's mama, none of them can do anything. It's all over, isn't that right? Tell the truth. It's all over. They broke. They're powerless. They're going crazy. 18 people, I think they said 18 people a day. Americans committing suicide, troops. Americans coming back home, homeless, jobless, wifeless. A guy come back home, been gone for 15 months. He got a 3-month-old baby. Start kind of saying, something's wrong with my man. Around military bases, there's more killing than in Detroit. They finished. Thank you very much. Akulu kali hava. Wa astaghfirullah liwalakum. Excuse me for talking so long, brothers and sisters, but it just grabs you and there ain't nothing you can do about it. Assalamu alaikum.